Can you imagine anyone unhappy about living on the beach on West Bay? A beautiful view of the water and those exquisite sunsets. Within walking distance of downtown, the wonderful shops, those amazing restaurants, 2 movie theaters, and all the incredible festivals in the open space. What's not to love? Well, apparently, not everyone is cut out for beach life. It was a beautiful fall day a couple years ago when Margie and I were walking along the beach a little east of Clinch Park. The salmon had just started running when we discovered a big guy lying on the beach gasping for breath. Now, as some of you know, I don't know a fish from my forehead. So I don't know if he was a coho or a chinook, but I could tell he wasn't happy. I'm guessing he didn't wake up that morning and say, "I think I'll go spend the afternoon on the beach." Now, I'm thinking he probably thought he'd head up the Boardman. Not that ending up at the fish weir would have been much better, but at least he would have had company, and the journey would have been a little more enjoyable. So my heart went out to this guy, flopping around, trying to catch his breath. So I asked him, "Hey, buddy, I don't know you from my forehead, but is there anything I can do?" All he could muster was a weak, "Help me." You didn't know your pastor could speak fish. I said to him, I don't know much about fish. So I said to myself, "Hey, you're a pastor. Your job is to care for people in trouble. You got this." So I said to my fishy friend, "People would kill for this view. You know, a view of the bay is half the pay." Margie just looked at me with that look that said, "You know, he lives in the bay." I thought, what else might make someone in a tough situation feel better? Well, I happened to have a winning Powerball ticket. It was worth millions. What was I going to do with all that money? So I gave it to him. Again, Margie gave me the look. "What's he going to do with that ticket? He doesn't have any pockets." About that time, a group of beautiful young women in bikinis came walking by. As it turns out, they were from that gentleman's club. Talk about your oxymoron. They were from that gentleman's club off 72 on the way to Bel Air. Now, don't get excited. I only know it's there because I drove by it on my way to Presbytery once. I said, "Ladies, is there anything you can do for my friend?" I can't even describe the look Margie gave me then. By that point, I was beside myself when I spied a half-empty bottle of wine. I thought, who doesn't enjoy a little wine on the beach now and then? So I gave him some, and he died. I've thought about that poor guy a lot. I gave him just about everything I could think of to make him happy. Things we chase after all our lives to make us happy. Amazing homes, piles of money, beautiful women or men, alcohol. Nothing helped. There was nothing I could do to make that fish happy on the beach. Because fish will never be happy on the beach. They will die. Sand is not their home. Water is their home. Our children knew that. The only thing that would have made my fishy friend truly happy, the only thing that would have helped him live at least a little longer, would have been for me to put him back in the bay. Fish belong in water. Water is their life. Okay, the story didn't really happen quite this way. In fact, I'm taking my lead from a story told by Craig Groeschel in The Christian Atheist, a story he borrowed from Max Lucado. But the point is the same. Like my fishy friend, the things of this world can't make us truly happy. Sometimes they may even kill us, because we don't belong to this world. The things in this world and the happiness they bring are temporary and fleeting. We were made for eternity. We were made to live in the presence of God. True happiness, what we might call joy or blessing, true happiness can only be found with God. We're shifting metaphors here from fish to grapes, another Traverse City staple, but the message is the same. Offering us one of the more poetic and abiding images of Christian community, Jesus speaks of himself as the true vine, the source of life. Those who abide in God's love, Jesus Christ, will have life and have it abundantly. Jesus is the source of true happiness or joy. Those who live in Christ are blessed, for Christ is the source of life. Jesus is the vine, the true vine, the vine of life. Those who abide in Jesus like branches on a vine shall thrive. God the Father, the creator of heaven and earth, the giver and sustainer of life, is the vine dresser, the master gardener. God is the one who cares for and tends the vine so the vineyard might grow and thrive. God is the one who removes dead branches from the vine and prunes those branches that no longer bear fruit so the vineyard may produce fruit in abundance. Speaking directly to his disciples, there's little question Jesus is also speaking to us, his church, the community of faith gathered after his resurrection to share the good news of God's love. Jesus' timeless words are as true today as when he first spoke them. Abiding in the love of God, Jesus Christ is the source of all life for us and for all who live in him. Jesus is our true happiness. Jesus is our joy. For Jesus, the world is God's vineyard. In God's vineyard, Jesus is the vine of life. His church, not the bricks and mortar buildings, not the membership rolls, not the institution, not even the visible church, the church we can see, but the invisible church, as Calvin called it, those who truly follow Christ in their hearts, loving God and neighbor more than life. The invisible church, Christ's true followers, are the branches bearing fruit in our world. For Jesus, there is an organic relationship between God, Jesus, and the church, which must never be severed. Nurtured by the love of God, Jesus is the vine, sustaining and nourishing the church invisible, Jesus' true followers, who, having been cleansed or pruned, are branches bearing fruit. Now, cleansed, that's an interesting word choice by the editors of the NRSV, the New Revised Standard Version of our Bible, cleansed. If you've studied the passage, you may be aware the Greek word katharizo, from which we get the word catharsis, the Greek word can be translated cleanse, as the NRSV has done, or it can be translated prune. So we might say the followers of Christ who have been cleansed in baptism have also been pruned to bear the fruit of God's love in the world. This is our purpose in life. This is our joy, to bear God's love. Jesus goes on to say, only those who abide in him, those who've been cleansed and pruned, will bear fruit. Those cut off from Christ, perhaps even some who dwell only in the visible church. Those cut off from Christ, who don't bear fruit, will be gathered like so many barren branches and thrown into the fire to be burned. My friends, these words are hard to hear. This is not the Jesus many of us have come to know and love. We much prefer the Jesus who walks with us in the garden or talks with us in the woods. The Jesus who answers our prayers and rewards our faith with prosperity. The Jesus who looks the other way when we chase after the things of this world. The Jesus who doesn't care how we vote. Friends, I get it. This Jesus, the true Jesus, doesn't play well in a consumer culture. Bouncy houses and fast food Christianity, that's what people want. The true Jesus is like a fish out of water. Or could it be we are the fish out of water? Friends, Jesus isn't making a threat here. Be good, bear fruit, or die. Jesus is speaking the truth about life. A truth we know in our hearts. If the branches are cut off from the vine, the source of life, they will die. And don't deflect this issue by asking, well, what about all those non-Christians? Are they all going to burn in hell? No. I've said it before. Their salvation is in God's hands. We are not to judge. We have enough to be concerned about for ourselves. Have you seen the state of Christianity in America? Beloved, Jesus is speaking to us, those who claim to be followers of Christ. And what Jesus is saying is this: if we want to know true happiness, what we might call joy, if we want to have life and have it abundantly, we will go to the source. We will abide in Christ. We will live in God's love. We will make Christ's joy complete. So how do we do this? How do we abide in Christ? How do we live in God's love? How do we make Christ's joy complete? Love God with all that we are. Love our neighbors, even our enemies. More than life. It's as simple as that. Do you love God more than your job, your pension, your family, your sports team, your political party, your civil rights, your free time, your addiction, your sin? If so, great. You are halfway home. What about your neighbors? What if they are darker than you or lighter? What if they are richer or poorer, more conservative or more progressive? What if they don't share your beliefs on what makes America great? Or how to stop gun violence? Or how to bring an end to poverty, hunger, or the healthcare crisis? Are you willing to love them in spite of your differences? Are you willing to work with them for the common good? Do you love them more than life itself? If you do, if you love your neighbors and God, you're in. You will abide in Christ. You will live in God's love. You will make Christ's joy complete. No matter what you may endure in this life, no matter what you may have to go through, if you love God and neighbor, you're in. Now, if you're there, if you keep Christ's commandments, thanks be to God. But if you're more like me, afraid you fall short in a few areas, think you may need a little pruning, feel like a fish out of water, then come. Let us worship the Lord together. For worship is where we learn to love. Thanks be to God.